This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM, by mobile app, and on the web at kexp.org. My guests today are Peter P. Mara and Chris Santella. Peter has written more than 175 scientific publications, is the co-editor of Birds of Two Worlds, and directs the Smithsonian Migratory Bird Center. Chris is the author of many books, including the 50 Places Travel and Outdoor series, and his writing has appeared in such publications as the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the New Yorker, and Trout. Peter Mara and Chris Santella are here to tell us about their new book, Cat Wars, The Devastating Consequences of a Cuddly Killer, published in 2016. Welcome to you both.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us, Diane.
What led you to write your book, Cat Wars? What is your goal?
Well, this was a project that I've been thinking about for a while, actually, and it's because I found that most people are completely unaware of the impacts that cats are having on biodiversity, human health, and on themselves. And so I felt like it was time to bring the science to a popular audience.
In your book, you speak about free-ranging cats as being the problem. Which cats are included in the term free-ranging cats?
So the broad term free-ranging cats refers to any cat that's let outside. And the way we set that up is you've got either owned cats, cats that are owned by somebody that come in at night or come in during the day, but the owners just let the cats outside. And you've got unowned cats, which can be part of a colony, TNR colony, trap, neuter, return colony. Or if they're out in a wild land, they can be completely feral, meaning that they have no dependence on humans whatsoever.
I would say that many people will reference all unowned cats as feral cats, but that's not really an accurate terminology because many of the cats that live in colonies, as Pete mentioned, or live in urban or semi-urban or sometimes even country settings, when you think of, say, barn cats, they are getting a level of their food from humans. So they are subsidized and as thus they have some connection with people and are not feral.
How many outdoor or free-ranging cats are there in the U.S.?
Across the U.S., there are about 90 million owned pet cats, and about 60% of those are allowed outside. For unowned cats, it's much more difficult to come up with a number because we don't have any real good estimates of their abundance. But best estimates are somewhere between 60 and 100 million unowned cats across the U.S.
Before we go into detail, would you give an overview of why free-ranging or outdoor cats are a problem?
Sure. It's because they impact biodiversity in pretty significant ways. In fact, when you look at their impact across the globe, they have caused or contributed to the extinction of 63 species around the globe. Many of those are on islands, but not all. In the United States, when you look at an analysis that we did about 3 years ago, we found that free-ranging cats, both unowned and owned, kill about 2.4 billion, that's a median estimate, songbirds or birds per year, and over 12 billion small mammals a year. They also kill quite a few reptiles and amphibians as well. So it's a significant take.
Why are there so many free-ranging cats?
It's a good question. It's in part because of irresponsible pet ownership over 100 years. We just really haven't been taking care of cats like we've taken care of dogs. And cats breed prolifically. And so if you don't have all your animals neutered, they breed quite rapidly. And people over the years just have felt fine with abandoning their animals. And as we've abandoned cats in various places, their populations have skyrocketed. And the other problem is that over the last 50 years, we've sort of entered into a more of a no-kill mindset where euthanasia is not acceptable anymore. And we think that that's actually contributed to the rise in the number of free-ranging cats across the United States and elsewhere.
Would you compare the life of an indoor versus an outdoor cat?
Sure. Indoor cats typically live twice as long as outdoor cats, and there's pretty good data on that. Not only that, outdoor cats are susceptible to all sorts of diseases. The leading cause of death for outdoor cats is being hit by cars. In the Seattle area, for example, the outdoor cats around here are always looking over their shoulder for fear of getting taken by a coyote, because coyotes are known to take a lot of outdoor cats. So predation on cats, whether it's coyotes or raptors, is another form of death. And all these methods of mortality are quite inhumane compared to, you know, a much more humane method of putting down cats in the form of euthanasia or sodium pentobarbital.
Would you say more about the role domestic cats have played in the extinction of other species?
So it's interesting because when we wrote the book, the one paper that had been published examining that very question, the number of extinctions around the globe, put the number at about 33 vertebrates. That included birds, mammals, reptiles, and amphibians. And that equals about 14% of the global extinctions over the last 500 years. That to us was a pretty significant take and certainly a major contribution to the overall sixth mass extinction that we're all so concerned about. But just a few weeks ago, there was another paper that came out in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences that pretty much doubled that number. They did another analysis looking at all the extinctions, and what they reported was that there were actually 63 species extinctions, 40 of which were birds, that cats contributed to around the globe. That's 26% of global extinctions, vertebrate extinctions, second only to rats, 30%. So that's a significant take for an animal perceived as a pet by some and a pest by others.
In which geographical areas do cats pose the greatest threat to endangered species?
Typically on islands, but not only on islands. In the United States right now, Hawaii is a real, real problem. There are enormous numbers of free-ranging cats in Hawaii, and they're regularly taking endangered and threatened species. Most of the species, native species in Hawaii, are threatened or endangered. But we have to remember that the predation that cats pose is not the only way that they kill animals. They also carry diseases, pathogens, like toxoplasma, a protozoan parasite. And those protozoan parasites get out into the environment in form of oocysts. And those oocysts are taken up by a variety of animals. And that can have real impacts on wildlife as well.
Would you say more about the role of cats as agents of disease?
Sure. There are a number of pathogens that cats carry, everything from rabies to the plague to toxoplasma, a protozoan parasite. And toxoplasma is quite significant. I think that as we look at this issue more and more, as more research is done, we're going to find that toxoplasma is the real reason we probably need to get cats off of the landscape. It's a protozoan parasite that breeds, sexually reproduces only in cats, their definitive host. And cats shed these oocysts from toxoplasma once in their life for about 3 weeks. And those oocysts that are shed in the millions into the environment can persist almost anywhere. They persist in frozen soil. They persist in marine environments. They are indestructible. They could probably be shipped up to Mars and they'd do fine. Unfortunately, once they're in the environment, they're taken up into humans accidentally through fecal-oral transmission, or it gets into irrigation systems where it's consumed through water or sprayed on irrigation fields where it eventually makes its way into livestock so people consume them as well through eating undercooked meat, and it also gets into wildlife. The problem with toxoplasmosis is once you get those oocysts, the toxoplasma, once you get those oocysts in your system, they work their way up to your brain, and they're there for the rest of your life. Most people are familiar with toxoplasmosis because of the threat that they pose to pregnant women, because we've known for years that they can cause an early abortions for women. And so doctors are always telling pregnant women, if you have cats, do not change the litter box. It's for that reason. It's for fear of consuming those oocysts. It's a real threat. But it does more than that. It changes the behavior of their rodents, and that's the whole purpose of this beautiful predator-prey relationship that's evolved with toxoplasmosis. It causes rodents to become less fearful of cats, making it easier for the cat to consume the rodent, thereby allowing that protozoan parasite to continue its life cycle. Once it's in humans, though, it also has the potential for changing their behavior or making them less fearful. And there's been some really amazing studies showing what toxoplasmosis does in humans.
How much of the human population is infected?
In the United States, up to 22% of the human population is thought to be infected with toxoplasmosis. Globally, it's thought to be over a third.
And what fraction of cats are infected?
You know, we don't know how many cats are infected, but it's thought that most cats that are let outside go through some infective stage with toxoplasmosis. Indoor cats, the risk is much lower.
What can humans do to avoid getting infected?
Well, unfortunately, because it's almost omnipresent in our environment, it's a challenging thing to avoid. One thing is to make sure that any meat that you eat is cooked to well done. That's something that the USDA and CDC encourage people to do. And also, if you have a cat, make sure you keep it indoors. There's one scientist who's been studying toxoplasma for about 20 years. And one of his first papers that he published 20 years ago basically said, you know, even though there seems to be a link between toxoplasmosis and schizophrenia, it's okay to have outdoor cats. Well, as I was reading his papers, his volumes of papers over the 20 years of his career that he's been studying this, I emailed him to do an interview with him, and I asked him, so how do you feel about outdoor cats and toxoplasmosis and the risk it presents to humans now? And he said, basically, my policy is if you have small children, I would not have outdoor cats because of the chances of them developing schizophrenia later in life.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guests are Peter Mara and Chris Santella, authors of the book Cat Wars, The Devastating Consequences of a Cuddly Killer. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP, 90.3 FM by mobile app, and on the web at kexp.org. How great a threat is toxoplasmosis to wildlife?
The threat of toxoplasmosis to wildlife is quite significant. In fact, there have been several mortality events with sea otters. California sea otters, a threatened and declining species. And what people have found is that when they've looked at dead sea otters along the coast of California, there was a wonderful study done on this, they found that 15% of those mortality events were infected with toxoplasmosis. Another 15% that had shark attacks on them also were infected with toxoplasmosis. So the idea there was that these sea otters may have lost their fear of sharks, and they actually were subject to being preyed upon. Hawaiian monk seals, another highly endangered species in the island of Hawaii, has had several mortality events due to toxoplasmosis. The Hawaiian crow, Alala, that is now extinct in the wild, its decline and its eventual extinction has been caused by multiple things. Certainly habitat destruction was a big driver there. But toxoplasmosis poisoning was definitely another factor that drove the species to decline. Just maybe 5 to 7 years ago, they tried re-releasing Alalas out into the environment, and all the animals died because of toxoplasmosis. So it's a real threat to wildlife.
What efforts have been made so far to address the issue of outdoor cats?
Well, there's one group in particular, the American Bird Conservancy, who has really tried to create an indoor cat campaign to get people to keep their cats indoors. Unfortunately, we don't have a real strong U.S.-wide effort to change the current landscape. And so it's one of the reasons we wrote the book, because we feel like municipalities, towns, states, the country should take this situation much more seriously.
Some conservation organizations that you would expect to be taking a stronger stance about keeping cats indoors have been very quiet on the topic. And while we can't substantiate this, we have felt that it's for fear of alienating potential donors who are also cat aficionados or cat lovers, and resisted putting out any messages about curtailing cat activity for fear of alienating that group.
Both in terms of killing other wildlife and also disease, are owned or unowned cats the bigger problem?
For killing wildlife, unowned cats typically are thought to contribute more to the mortality of birds and other wildlife. But that's not to suggest that owned cats are not contributing as well. They are. In the case of owned cats, to me, that's lower hanging fruit, because, you know, our feeling is that it's about time we started treating cats like dogs. You know, in the 20th century, we got to the point where dogs were the primary vector for rabies. Dogs were biting people. Dogs were, you know, getting hit by cars. It wasn't safe for them. It's the same situation we're in with cats now. We started to license dogs. We started to require leash laws on dogs. We got that under control. It's rare now that you see someone who just opens their door and lets their dog outside, or stray packs of dogs. There's certainly places in the U.S. where you see that, but you don't see it anymore because we ramped up our pet responsibility when it came to dogs. It's about time that we started to do that with cats.
In terms of the unowned cats that are running around, how well do trap, neuter, return programs work to reduce their numbers?
We didn't find any evidence in the literature that trap, neuter, return really work. So there's entirely a lack of empirical support for trap, neuter, return in terms of its ultimate goal, which is to cause the extinction of the colony. That's the idea of trap, neuter, return. It's a no-kill solution to getting cats off the landscape. So the idea here is that people will just keep feeding these colonies, and they'll trap them and try to get the entire colony neutered or spayed, so sterilized, so they aren't reproducing. And then over time, these colonies will go extinct. So in theory, it's interesting, but there are several problems with it. The first is the predator is still in the environment. You still have this non-native invasive predator in the environment, impacting wildlife, potentially spreading disease. That's a problem. The second big issue is that it's very, very hard to capture enough cats to stop the reproduction of these colonies. There's been some really good papers that have shown that you have to get at least 75 to 90% of the colony captured and neutered to stop the reproduction in that colony. The third big issue is people will see these colonies out there and they'll view these as places where they can abandon their pets. They can abandon their cats. So these colonies actually also act as a lure for people that can't bring their cats to these no-kill shelters because these no-kill shelters are filled. And instead, they'll put them outside where they're being fed and cared for by people who really do care about cats, but don't understand that the impact that they're ultimately having is to allow these colonies to persist even longer than they would think.
How widespread are trap, neuter, and return programs?
Unfortunately, they're quite widespread. It's a big issue we cover in the book because in some towns like D.C., Chicago, there are anywhere between 300 and 700 colonies. But because they're kept secret, because they're not really managed in a public and transparent way, we really don't know how many colonies are on the landscape. But there have been some estimates that are quite alarming, that, again, upwards of 700, 800 in some cities. But it's kept secret.
And you've seen some cities now have really formalized their approach to free-ranging cats as their management approach being trap, neuter, return. Houston is one example where that is part of the way that they are trying to deal with cats, which is frustrating to us because we have found that it really is not a productive way of dealing with the population growth.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM by mobile app and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guests are Peter Mara and Chris Santella, authors of the book Cat Wars: The Devastating Consequences of a Cuddly Killer. What laws or government policies currently address the issue of outdoor cats?
Again, they vary from municipality to municipality. Some states are a little bit more strict on it than others, but for the most part, there's nothing that's enforced. There are some that have license laws, but very few, and it's really turned the head the other way, and it's just an issue that's not enforced.
And what kind of legal actions are available to address the problem of free-ranging cats?
There are very few, actually, which is another thing that's quite disturbing, because even in places where they're impacting endangered species, there is very little legal action that's being imposed to try to get them away from those highly sensitive areas. Again, it's another reason we wrote the book, to try to bring more attention to this issue, which we think is quite significant.
There was a very interesting case that brought some of the legal issues to play that occurred in Galveston, Texas, where an ornithologist who knew there were some groups of piping plovers nesting on some sand dunes and also knew that there was a colony of free-ranging cats nearby, he witnessed one of the cats attacking one of the birds, and he eventually went back and shot that cat as a means of trying to protect the endangered species. And he was viewed by the bridge keeper who tended the bridge where the cats lived underneath. And it eventually went to trial. And one of the defenses that was used was the fact that he was trying to protect an endangered species. I think that in the end, it was a hung jury. I don't think any definite legal precedent came out of that case, except I think the state of Texas made free-ranging cats, unowned cats, protected under their animal rights laws. So it was not maybe the outcome that people that were concerned about wildlife would have liked to have seen.
But just to add on to that, we don't in any way condone the use of guns or any other inhumane way of taking cats off the landscape. In that example, that's just not the way to deal with this. We wish there were legal means to deal with the protection of endangered species when they're vulnerable to cats, but these things just aren't being enforced.
How have efforts to remove free-ranging cats been met by the general public?
Mixed, in part because there's a real loud vocal minority who've been out there talking about how free-ranging cats are part of nature, how they're part of the environment, how they deserve to be outside in these settings, just like wildlife have that right. And in our opinion, we've known for over 100 years, through all the research that's been done, and there's been a lot of research, whether on the biodiversity impacts or the disease impacts, over the last 50 years, And it's about time that the popular community, the majority, learned about the impacts of cats and pushed their policymakers and lawmakers to do something about this issue.
And again, I think that those same groups have been very successful at promoting the idea that trap, neuter, release is an effective means of managing the colonies, whereas we've tried to show there really isn't proof to reinforce that idea. And we've been seeing, when I was researching this, I think we came up with something like 500 municipalities across the country that had adapted trap, neuter, return as part of their outdoor cat management policy.
In your view, what is the best approach to the problem of outdoor cats?
Well, it's a good question. And the first thing I want to say is that there's no simple solution here. There just isn't. And I know people want a simple solution, but it's not going to come in this case. This is a difficult situation. From my perspective, the first thing I'd like to see is an identification of where outdoor cats are overlapping with highly sensitive areas. So high priority areas for biodiversity, or areas where cats pose the greatest risk to human health, or where cats pose the greatest risk to themselves, where they may be killed by coyotes or some other factor where it's not humane for them. Those are the areas where we really need to get the cats off the landscape as quickly as possible. And so I would be in favor of prioritizing those areas, capturing those cats, trying to get them adopted out, put into sanctuaries, or as a last resort, the sad reality of euthanasia. The other lower priority areas, and these areas need to be deemed as low priority by professionals, by wildlife managers, the people that understand what the threats really are and what the vulnerabilities really are. Those populations, those cats that are left on the landscape need to be managed properly. They need to be microchipped. They need to have licenses. They need to be given vaccinations and booster vaccinations. And those populations need to be counted on a regular basis if they're going to be out on the landscape.
In the cases where euthanasia is thought to be necessary, what are your thoughts about the ethics of killing one species to save another?
My thinking on that is that as humans, we have manipulated the environment in so many ways. We manage everything now. I mean, we're managing most things, whether it's a water diversion or it's trying to put salmon back in the stream and raising hatchery fish to put them back in. That gets to be a difficult question where we're talking about taking out one native species to protect another native species. I have less of a problem with it when it's a non-native invasive species. I'm okay with taking out a non-native invasive species if it's causing the decline or impacting native species. I think it's a difficult question, but I'm watching species go away right before my very eyes. Across North America, just for birds, we're seeing over 30% of the birds in North America declining significantly over the last 40 years. Cats pose a significant threat to these populations. We need to do whatever we can to try to stop those declines. Getting cats off the landscape where they clearly don't belong is one of those ways.
What most stands in the way of addressing the problem of outdoor cats?
You know, I think a lot of it's ignorance. When I see people respond to the book, they'll say, well, cats are part of the native environment. They're part of nature. And I see nature very differently. I see native species as being part of nature. Cats evolved because of humans. We created cats just like we created golden retrievers, just like we created cows and sheep and chickens. There are native relatives to these species, but their evolution occurred because of the breeding that we did of them. We spread them around the world. I see real clear differences between cats and other native species. And I'm not suggesting we're going to drive cats to extinction. Cats are wonderful pets. And inside, they're adorable. There's no question about it. I've had cats. Outside, on the landscape, it's not good for wildlife, not good for human health, and not good for them.
I would say one of the other things that stands in the way of us trying to manage the problem is that many people don't understand the cumulative effect of the impact that cats are having on wildlife. You know, I've talked to neighbors who say, yeah, my cat brings in, you know, one or two birds a month. That's not that big a deal. And maybe if that were the only block of people that we're talking about, it wouldn't be that big of a deal. But imagine that happening on every block in every town and city in America. And that's how you get to numbers like 2.4 billion birds killed by cats.
What do you hope your book will accomplish?
Well, I think increasing awareness, actually changing people's perceptions so they start demanding action at local scales. They start asking their lawmakers to enforce leash laws, to not allow TNR colonies to keep emerging across the United States. And ultimately, that we care for cats more. I mean, that's part of the issue here is that I think it's ironic, but what we're saying is that people don't value cats as much as they value dogs or value wildlife. And so our hope is that our book creates this awareness that ultimately will be better not just for wildlife and for people, but ultimately better for cats.
I spoke with a woman named Sharon Harmon, who is the head of the Oregon Humane Society, and she made a great point. She said that if you were going out to dinner one night and you saw a dog wandering over by a dumpster, you would cancel your dinner plans. You would go and try to catch that dog and get him to a vet or to the Humane Society. If you were going to that same restaurant and you saw a cat walking free over by the dumpster, you would probably just continue with your plans to go and have dinner because we just don't value cats the same way. There's this sense that there's so many of them that if we lose one, we'll just get another one, and we don't value them as much as we should. And it's not fair to the cats.
What's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
If you own a cat, I'd like to leave a message with them that they should keep their cats indoors. And if it's an outdoor cat, they could flip it. Lots of friends of mine, that people that I've known that have owned outdoor cats, after they've talked to me, they've actually been able to start to keep their cats indoors. They've switched it around a little bit, and it's a big change.
Or to use a catio. Actually, there's a woman in the Seattle area who builds catios and has plans for catios to build your own. And that's a way you can have your cat outside, but to have them in an enclosed area.
I'm also starting to see people put their cats on leashes more. It's wonderful. Just in the past 10 years, I've seen more and more people put their cats on leashes. So that's another big change. The other thing I'd love to see is to see people speak out against TNR and cat colonies, these unowned cats that are let roam free. They really aren't meant to be out on the landscape. And so I'd love to see more communities speak out against TNR.
And we're at least truly manage the TNR colonies as they are existing now. They really aren't managed. And Pete set out some of the guidelines earlier about what should be done to better manage these colonies.
Well, thanks so much for being here.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Diane.
You were just listening to Peter P. Mara and Chris Santella, authors of the book Cat Wars: The Devastating Consequences of a Cuddly Killer, published in 2016 by Princeton University Press. Sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts, along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on Demand, and then Podcasting. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the Sustainability segment again next week on listener-powered 90.3 FM by mobile app and on kexp.org.